Let's begin this morning. Well, we've already begun, but let's start with a... You don't need a rosary, just start by... thank you. Not necessary, but thank you. That's all right. Good. Start by a rosary. If you don't have a rosary, that's okay. Of compassion. Compassion for oneself and compassion for all beings. Good way to start, always. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Om mani padme hum. It's just nice to sit here. Do you have any... I have lots to talk about. I mean, lots to cover in terms of this teaching. But do you have any questions that you'd like to... Because some of you studied this a lot before. And from what I talked about last night, anything that you want to ask? I like your questions, by the way. They're very good. Always, always good. It's a very good question, Simon. Important one. I've heard that one from you before. But it's an important one. Always, always good to review that important point. So I'll be, if you have any questions, fine. So I'll begin. In the meditation of Anapanasati. So you've read a little bit? Anapanasati. Is a very, very direct route to liberation and calm. Tranquility, both tranquility and calm. It is a suitable meditation for all types of beings, especially dull. A dull type? Very, very good for dull type. But anybody can practice Anapanasati. And it is fantastic. However, the problem is, sometimes, is that not many people have the patience to follow and practice Anapanasati right through. They get stuck. This is normal. Just get stuck. So they get stuck somewhere. And they give up. or they keep doing the same thing over and over and over again for 10 years, expecting something to happen. Because you really need a teacher for this, or very good instruction for a long time, and then it's unbelievable, it's fantastic. So you see so anapanasati is anapanasati. Sati is mindfulness, but also means recollection, to recollect. I don't know if you know what that, this is a big topic, to recollect. To understand through seeing, through experience, how something has happened. Like recollection is, how did you get here this morning? What was the mind like to bring you here to the lake? What was the mind, what was the feel of the body and the consciousness when you were eating breakfast this morning? When you came through the door? When you sat down? That's mindfulness, but it's also the ability to remember what happened. How did this happen? But not thinking, by recalling, recollecting, very clear recollecting. So two things, sati, which in Sanskrit is smriti, in Pali is sati, almost always is translated as mindfulness, but that's only one translation. Only one translation. It really means to be present, to be here continuously, not somewhere else, not in the past, actually not in the present, but that's later, we'll discuss that. Not in the past and not in the future. But you all know the feeling of being right here, like, you know, fishing. Yeah, just right here. Nothing else, just here. You don't have to be anywhere else, just here. Just attentive here. That's mindfulness. But it's not enough. Because even if you're here, you don't go anywhere. That we could trademark that. Oh, yeah, okay. Even if you're here, you don't go anywhere, you know? You can be right here for 20 years. It doesn't mean you actually go anywhere. You just get good at being here. That's not liberation. So there's something else to mindfulness. You need awareness in the mindfulness. You need recollection. As Namdar Rinpoche often said to me, it's recollection. That's what really liberates. You have to know why this is good or this is not for the good. This is the hardest part. It's called discrimination. Very few people I ever meet in the West like the word discrimination when it comes to meditation. It's the last thing they want to do, discrimination. They don't want to know. Just give it to me. Just give me the exercise. Just give me the thing to do. But you see, the Buddha said enlightenment is knowing the pleasure for the displeasure. That's what he said. And it's profound because it's very hard to know what is leading to liberation and what is not leading to liberation. That's very difficult. It's very confused in the mind. Things that are shiny, things that are lovely, oh, that must be good. The truffles with the eggs and the bacon and the anchovies, that is oh, superb. Maybe not. Maybe not. So this word sati is very important. Is do you actually know if the state or the activity leads to freedom or tranquility, real tranquility, or does it lead to what you think or have been taught is tranquility? This is so important. Because most of what we learn, we buy. Do you know what I mean? You go to school, you buy information. We'll get into this. But most of what we consume, even knowledge, we have purchased from somebody. Purchased. Bought, or we consume. But we don't necessarily know by ourselves for sure. It's too complicated in life to know. Someone says, silver. You go, oh, okay. It's not. But you go, oh, okay. And people don't necessarily know if that is true, but so much what we think we know is from something else, secondary. Yeah? Secondary. So to actually find out what states and what activity is actually going to lead to liberation, is liberative, is freedom. That takes a lot of direct experience for you to know and go, it is. I have proof. This is a tradition of proof. Not a tradition of make-believe, it's proof. Show me the proof. If you come and study with me and do insight meditation, I will ask you all the time, give me the proof. Where's the evidence? I don't know. Give me the evidence. Not from what you learned in a book, your own direct experience. Again and again and again and again. For instance, do these paper or cardboard or wood birds, do they protect the birds from the window? Do they? They're supposed to, yes. But do they? How do you know? So you see them, oh, okay, that works. Somebody does that, you imitate. But it may not ever work. Do you see? You imitate that. I think that's a great idea. But it may not work. We've done experiments at home. I have big windows in my living room. And you can put something right up next to the window, and the birds, sometimes when they're young, they'll fly right into the window, right to your head. They'll fly right in your head while you're sitting outside. Because they're crazy. When they're feeding and they're mating, they're crazy. Oh yeah. They'll even hit the building. They're trying to fly by the building, hit the building. So maybe they work, and maybe you have to find out. How do you find out? You have to observe. You have to really watch and see, does it work? Does it work? Does it work? So that's sati. Sati is the mindfulness to see what leads to liberation, what leads to freedom, what does not. And that gets deeper and deeper and deeper and deeper and deeper. And anapana is fantastic, because normally people say mindfulness or meditation on breathing. And most people think of breathing as this kind of breathing, yes? Or they translate it as respiration. It's not what it means. It's the Pali word for pana. It's like bread, eh? Pana, but not. P-A-N-A, which in Sanskrit is prana. Prana. Anaprana. Anaprana, which means life energy. It means the breath of life, spirit. In Latin, spirit. Spiritus. Vitality of being. Vitality. Meditation on vitality. Fantastic. And prana is the old word for breath. So you can translate it as breath, but it doesn't mean what most people think of as breath. It's much bigger than breath. So many people are trying to figure out how to breathe. So they say, they read the meditation, they go, now tell me how to breathe. Wrong. Wrong. Show me the technique for breathing. Wrong. There's no technique for breathing. You want to get rid of all techniques for breathing. Does a baby need to be taught how to breathe? They breathe. They breathe very well, right? Mm-hmm. A young baby breathes very well. They don't need to be taught how to breathe. Special technique? You know, maybe 2 years old, special school, this is how you breathe. They don't need that. So anapanasati is mindfulness of breathing to find out what breath is. Breath is life. So how are you going to become alive? That's really what it is. Anapanasati is how do you become fully alive. And there's no technique for breathing in this tradition. In Anapanasati, the Buddha's teaching of mindfulness of breath, he didn't teach a technique of breathing. He said, really, if you read it, by watching the breath, observing the breath, the feeling, the sensation of breath, it will unfold naturally. That's brilliant. You let it unfold naturally, not because you learn, or, you know, something, you're doing something. This is not doing something, this is letting the breath be discovered through awareness. So really what that is, you could translate the title as Discovering Aliveness of Breath Through Mindfulness. Discovering breath through mindfulness. That would be more traditional. This meditation at one time was really called energy yoga. It's a yoga because you're going to study the energy, which is prana. Prana also means energy. When we use the word energy, we mean prana, breath, aliveness. The meditation of Anapanasati is really a touch meditation. Touch is touch meditation. Touch meditation. Touch is one of the most direct means for insight and for tranquility. Touch. And you see people, if you look at life, modern life, you'll see why. If a person is feeling they need to calm, they will often do what? What are the things they do? Sports?
Massage.
Massage, go for massage. It's good. Go to a hot tub, spa. Yeah? Sports, run.
Listen to music
is also touch. You're touched. You're feeling vibration. Yeah? Go to a concert. You don't have to do anything. It's listening, but you're being touched. It's changing your breathing. What other kinds of things? Sailing? You want to be calm? Go sail. You want to be really calm? Go swim across the lake. It's touch. Your body is being touched, opened. Your breathing is being changed. Racquetball, squash, tennis, golf, eating. Is this drinking or touch? This is touch. You put something against your lips, one of the most direct ways of changing your breathing. Nothing to do with liquid, unless you need liquid. Have you ever seen in class? Anybody have a bottle? No, that's okay. But you see in class sometimes people, they're, you know, you look at them, they take their bottle, like they're dying of thirst all the time. That's a very rare disease, you know. In Canada, United States, and now in New Zealand, it's a very common disease. Everybody has to have a bottle, you know. Always have a bottle with a nipple, you know, the nipple. And they're always like this. There must be just a terrible disease of being so dehydrated all the time. Terrible disease.
Yeah? Missing mom.
Missing mom. We will be psychoanalytic. It's missing mom. We could go a long way with this, but that would take up too much time today. It'd be fun, but it would take up too much time. And then, of course, the student has to go pee. So you're talking, and they say, excuse me, I've got to go. So always leaving classes now. I'm not kidding. In New Zealand, it's a very big problem. I said, what are you doing? They've been here for half an hour. They've just drank a whole liter of water before class. I'm not kidding. There's someone I know who, before the class, goes and pees, like on the way, right before class, he pees. And then he has to go during class because he already drunk 2 liters of water before class. It's become epidemic. It's amazing. But it's all about touch, you see. How to be comfortable in the body. Yeah, that's true. So now we have breath, which is vitality, life, being alive. How are you going to get alive unless you are in touch? In touchment. Does it make sense? Mm-hmm. And we do this all day long. We do it without knowing all the time, trying to be in touch with something. In touch. Mm-hmm. Grounded. Because our vitality, our breath, is always being changed by touch, by sound, by seeing. We're always changing our breath. This is deep. This is so profound. It's, you know, I sometimes spend a month or two or three teaching this because it is so much about all of life. If you are not in touch, you cannot breathe. And most of the problems that I see with people is they don't breathe. They stop breathing. That's really it. Not this kind. Because I see them doing that all the time. They're, you know, something. Working out, exercise, something. But they're not breathing. They stopped breathing maybe 30 years ago. Their energies are terrible. If your energies are poor, your emotions are a problem. And then you spend a lot of money and a lot of time trying to breathe. This is what people do. They're trying to breathe. As soon as you breathe, you're perfectly happy. I guarantee it. I'll make you a bet. $10,000. I will win. Guaranteed. I have no problem. $100,000. I'll win the bet. As soon as you breathe once, you are perfectly happy. You need to do nothing else in the whole universe but just be. You'll feel perfect. As soon as you breathe. The person, and this is my own, I've never read this, but this is what I believe, so take this with a grain of salt. But from what I have experienced with people, when the breathing becomes very poor, then the things people have to do become very extreme, including drug addiction. Because, as I've been told, I've never even taken a hard drug. I think the most has been codeine and aspirin. I think that's the most. Oh, and nitrous oxide for teeth. But people who have been addicted to heroin, cocaine, have told me, you know, you inject that or you take that drug, you feel in love. You feel loved. You feel alive. And you ask them, what does it feel normally? I don't feel alive. So you have to do something to feel alive. Right? Something. We all do that. What do we do to feel alive? Hobbies, partner, make love, eat. Everything we do is to feel alive. Right? Isn't that right? You want to feel alive, so you do things. The problem is, the difference is, if you do things, you're not necessarily taking the time to study aliveness. There's a big difference between doing it and knowing what aliveness is. Maybe we can get a little bit of air, a little bit of open. It's hotter up here, because I have more hot air. It's a joke. That's a joke. Is it making sense? Mm-hmm. Makes sense. So the entire meditation is slowing down, incredibly slowing down to study, not because someone tells you how, to study moment by moment contact, touch, with breath, to discover what it is to breathe fully, to be completely alive, step by step by step by step by step. Now, if you think about it, you would say, well, I am alive, correct? How do you measure being alive? What is the measure of being alive? I think, therefore I am. I think that was a famous European. Right, Descartes? I think, therefore I am. Many people, they go, I feel. I feel, therefore I'm alive. I think, therefore I'm alive. Other people, they're very body-centered. I touch, I hear, I smell, I taste, I see, therefore I'm alive. If I can't see, I'm dead. Well, maybe not. If I can't touch, I'm dead. If I can't hear, I'm dead. Take away all the senses, are you dead? No. No. But for some people, it would be devastating. It would be the end, not alive. So, in touch, however it is in the mind, experience, is alive. You could even say, we'll come to this eventually, maybe today, maybe tomorrow, is to be alive is to experience. Take away experience and you're no longer alive. You could say that. So this meditation is profound because it's really studying what is breath, aliveness, at all levels. And the most difficult place to start traditionally is what? The mind. It's too tricky. I point up here, but it could hear. Some people could point down here. That's a joke. But some people, that's where the mind is. Other people, it's right here, or here. But if you think about it, the most difficult thing to do is to study being alive by the experience of thinking. It's very tricky. It's conceptual. So traditionally, like almost every meditative tradition, whether it's Sufi, whether it is Christian mystical tradition, Zen, it doesn't matter which tradition, almost every single tradition starts with a body. The body is the easier, even very difficult still, but the body is the easier place, most direct route to start, both to become calm and for wisdom. Make sense? You'll see why. It's the most direct way. This is why some people, they'll go for a massage, go to the spa, somehow get touched. Right? If a person is very anxious, full of anxiety, worry, one of the fastest ways is just touch them. Hold them, touch them. That's why, not here so much. I don't think Switzerland, maybe now, but on the west coast of Canada, everybody hugs everybody. The first thing they have to do is they have to hug you to make you feel okay. Like you're not okay, so you have to be hugged. I don't know if you have that in this culture, but it's very big. California, British Columbia, very big. You meet, give me a hug. Hold on to you, because you gotta be okay with me. You see? But you know what it is? It's human contact. And maybe in Switzerland, is just same as Toronto. Yeah, Toronto.
Yeah, very Toronto.
Very Toronto. Yeah. Handshake. But you see all these kinds of contact from hugging and kissing, right? And even shaking the hand is all about contact, all about touch, being in touch and feeling less anxiety. Did you follow? It's always about feeling less anxiety. If I can contact you, feel you, it's safe. If I can't feel you, you may be dangerous. Also, of course, it's about smell. Because when you kiss the cheeks, you are smelling. It's mostly about smell. If you shake hands, you see people who shake hands, they almost always get the hand to the face, somehow. Brush the face. Very fast. It's like, if you photograph it, you'll see it's very fast. Just a quick. Are they safe, or should you be frightened? Yeah. Because our smell is so deep, we want to know if the person is good or foe. Should we run away, or should we stay? And that's very deep. You use smell. But still contact. It's still touch. You have to get close enough to go, okay, it's safe. Whew. It's all right. So if you think about the question I asked last night, what is suffering and what produces suffering? That's the entire core of the Buddhist teaching. What is the origin of suffering? Remember? Four Noble Truths? Always remember. All of the Buddhist teaching started with one thing. What is suffering? What causes suffering, and how do you come out of it? That's it. And what's the path? Those are the four. Four Noble Truths. There is suffering, there is a cause of suffering, there's cessation of suffering, and there's a path out. All meditation comes from those four. If it doesn't, it's not Buddha Dharma. Remember that. If you're not teaching that, it's not Buddha Dharma. It may be something else, but it's not Buddha Dharma. The Buddha was very clear, and teachers have been clear on this for thousands of years. The tradition is very clear. All Buddha Dharma is compassion to bring people out of suffering by the realization, the insight, wisdom, as to what is the cause of suffering. If you know the cause of suffering, you stop. It's easy, but it's very difficult. So no one, almost nowhere, is the teaching of the Four Noble Truths taught as a meditation. It's too difficult for most people. Way too difficult. The most direct approach is you meditate directly on that which causes suffering. And you come out because you discover the cause of suffering. You stop. Very difficult. So it's not taught. Rarely taught. It's too... It's just too direct. It's too direct. So you come another approach. This is a very direct approach, but it's not perfectly direct. It gets like this. See? Any questions so far? All is clear? Yeah? Okay. So most traditions, they start with the body because the body can give a direct reading on how you feel physically. There's another reason. Is you know probably from your life that if you can be touched, if you can actually feel sensation, then you can have direct experience and feel good. For most people, not for everybody, by the way. This is the problem. Okay. So you'll see on the sheet, this handout number one. Thank you. That's good. Four tetrads? Oh, they're leaving already. It's falling apart. So you see in this, it's divided into four sections, and the first one, the first tetrad, first four, is body. Kaya nupasana, Pali, And we need to look at this word, very important word, kaya nupasana. Kaya is body. Now you say, well, I know body. Everybody knows body, right? It's easy. My body. Is that right? Everybody knows body. It's easy. I have a body. I can feel a body. No. Very hard. It takes time. The word is actually two words, kaya, which means a body. We'll discuss that because we don't have bodies, you know. We don't have a body. We have a mental body. We have a imagination of a body. Hundreds of bodies. We have to find that out. But you see this other word, anupasana. Do you see that word? Anupasana. Kaya, but it's actually K-A-Y plus anupasana. This is very important to understand how you meditate. Normally, this meditation of Anapanasati normally is taught, merci beaucoup, is taught as a Vipassana meditation. Do you all know that word, Vipassana? Mm-hmm. Vipassana? Insight meditation. Almost always, this is taught as insight meditation. So that word, Anupasana, is basically Vipassana. But it's different. It's not exactly the same, and there's a reason for it. And very rarely does anybody ever explain what this word means. It's always explained as Vipassana. It's not correct by tradition. It's not correct. It's different than Vipassana. Okay? Vipassana means to see clearly, see again and again, over and over and over. But Vipassana is not a technique. It means knowledge of how things are, how it really is, not a technique. There are Vipassana techniques, but Vipassana really means wisdom. Okay. It is extremely rare for anybody to develop wisdom without study. Do you know what I mean? Study? You have to spend time. So we have another word. We have the word meditation. In Tibetan is gom. There's many words in Pali, but usually sati or jhana for meditation. But you see, to develop vipassana, develop wisdom, you have to study something again and again and again and again. Not just look, not just see it again, but you have to understand, not intellectually, why, in your heart, why, how, why. Discrimination. So the word anupasana means contemplation. You know the English word contemplation? It means to ripen. That's literally what the word anupasana means to, the meaning is to ripen something. Again, over and over and over, so it ripens and blossoms. So anupasana means you give the student a theme. This is making sense? You give a student a theme to study over and over and over again until it ripens. Not just watching. This is the problem with meditation. Is you can watch for 100 years but never see anything. I'll give you an example. You sit here. And Suzanne goes back and forth for 10 years. And I walk. But I still don't know why. Do you see? Still don't know why. Or you sit here and you see a bird go like this. One time it's over here. Another time the bird is over here. For 10 years. Great. You don't know why. Did you understand? You simply don't know why, but you have watched. So every once in a while, thank you. But why did the bird do that? Every once in a while, someone comes to me and they say, I would like to ask you some questions. Yes? Well, I have been studying, I've been practicing Vipassana for 10 years, 15 years. I go, good. Yes. I have my instructions 10 years ago. Good. Is it going well? No. Why not? Well, they told me to watch my tip of my nose. Good. What did you discover? Nothing. I've been watching the tip of my nose. Sometimes I get calm and sometimes I'm not so calm. They didn't say anything else. No, just watch the tip of your nose. And it will all work. 10 years. 15 years. This is crazy. This is not the tradition. You have to have instruction. So watching birds go back and forth or the breath going in and out is not sufficient to bring about wisdom or liberation. It's not. You have to have discrimination. You have to know what's going on. So some days you get calm and some days you're not calm. Why? Is there a Kleenex? Is there something for... is there a Kleenex room? Or even paper towel? Merci beaucoup. That's good. Great. Yep. Is this making sense? Making sense. Okay. So you see, if you look at the sheet, this, by the way, this is a outline I made up. Is an outline of this, of the entirety of this short form. So all that chart is in here. This is more detailed. But I'm going to read a little bit from this. But you'll see. It's very rare for someone to make observation and suddenly, right away, aha, makes perfect sense. It's rare. Bird flies by, and you go, I know why. Just like that. No, you study again and again and again and again and again and again and again, and you make observations and you ask why, and eventually you go, oh, of course. And you have the evidence. That's anupassana. So you give, you know, like in music, you give out an exercise to do and say, go away and practice scales, something, maybe art, something. Go and practice and tell me what comes up, ripens, you know? Like I often give students the practice of making croissants. It's very difficult. Making the perfect croissant is very hard. I go, go explore. They try. Eventually I have to say to them, because they look in a book, they look on the internet, eventually I say, you know, you could make it much faster if you go see a master baker. No, that's okay. That's okay. Because today, in today's world, no, just the internet. I'll get another internet movie. A YouTube. It's all on YouTube. That's true. And they try again, and it's like this big. Full of butter, this big. I say, maybe you should see if the yeast is working. No, it's fresh. No, you should see if the yeast is working. It's fresh. So this is fantastic. It's just like anupassana. Here's your meditation. Go away and let's have croissants with coffee, because coffee and croissants are fantastic. I will not ask a professional. You know why? Because bakers, they often have to get up at 4 o'clock in the morning. So my student, they don't want to do that. It's too early. So each one that has gone to study from a baker has got it. It saved them a lot of time because the baker could explain what you cannot see in YouTube or read even in a book. You can't. You really need to see it happen. And then they go, oh my God. And all of a sudden the next day it's like, oh, croissants. But that's anupassana. You study why. You have to find out why. And sometimes it's not even, it's not intellectual. It's how you roll out the pastry. How do you, what temperature do you let it sit? Do you see? And you really can't get that from a book. They miss those things. Like how to do latte art. Mm-hmm. It's very hard to do latte art in coffee without what feeling. Someone just, you watch the hand movement, yeah? And the texture of the milk. And then you go, oh, okay. And eventually you get it. It's very, very hard. So anupassana is very important to understand. It's the contemplation, is the theme by which you ripen the experience. Otherwise, you just get an experience. You don't know what to do with it. If you read some of the great insight manuals from the East by the great insight teachers, they have the same criticism. These people come to do insight meditation. They have no background in Buddha Dharma, and they have experiences, and they have no idea what those experiences are. They're just like this. It's a problem. Because they don't do the anupassana, the long-term contemplation, the theme. So far, so good? Yeah? Yeah. So you see, it starts with, in the first tetrad, first section here, it starts breathing in long, he knows. Now this can also be she. He was talking mostly to bhikkhus, to not monks in those days, to wandering mendicants. So it can be she. Breathing in long, he or she knows. Now that's unusual. Knows. You have to know. Right there it starts with knowing. Not this is not this kind of meditation at all. This is high precision work. This is like going to CERN. This is engineering. It's not. That's good. And it's not good, you just get up and you leave. Yeah? Boring. Boring. So this is, do I know if it's short? Do I know if it's long? What does it feel like when it's long? What does it feel like when it's short? And that's not it, because short and long is not the only kind of breathing. Is it? You ever have those? Yeah? Or goes on forever? Feels like it just goes on? Or deep breath? What kind of breath? What kind of breath does it feel like in the mind, in the body? So you have to start by knowing what kind of breath is inventory. You know the word taxonomy in English? You know taxonomy? Darwin. Darwin was a great taxonomist.
It's like in the bathroom, they have a fish chart. It has all the Latin names. Mm-hmm. That's yeah. Like they're classifying the fish.
Yeah, you classify all the different types of breath and what they mean. This is the breath of anxiety. This is the breath of worry. This is the breath of feeling good. This is the breath of ecstasy. This is the breath of clarity. This is the breath of settled. Do you see? This bird, this fish is called, you get to know, not, that's different. How do you get to know what is calm and what is not calm? You have to make a taxonomy. Do you know what I mean? Taxonomy? What's the breath like? What's the breath like? What kind of breath? What did it do? What did it do? What did it do? Make sense? You know, if you go for a massage, okay, who's ever had a massage? All of you? You all know I'm talking about massage? If you go for a massage, have you ever had a massage where you go, that was a great massage, and that was not such a good massage? How do you know the difference? You are making judgments, yes? You always make judgments. We all make judgments. Isn't that right? Isn't that correct? We are judgers.
Yes.
Yes. Are we judgers? Yes. Come on, we're all judgers, right? But you see, in meditation, we don't judge. We pretend that we don't judge. We give up judging for... That's nonsense. If you're going to judge, right? Because we all judge. Then you have to judge well. Why do you go back to the same massage therapist when they don't do any good? Because someone told you they're good? Would you? Okay. Would you go for one whole year to the same massage therapist and they make you feel bad? But someone tell your friend says, they're the best in the world. You know how that is? They're the very best. They're the very best. Would you go to a psychotherapist for 5 years and nothing happens? Would that make sense? No. Wouldn't make sense, would it? If you have an instrument that doesn't work, maybe it's not you. You need a new instrument. You know, I mean, you have to be clear about this. As Einstein said, something like Einstein said, to do the same thing over and over and over again and it doesn't work is insanity. You know, the definition, I think he said, the definition of insanity is you do the same thing over and over and over again and it doesn't work. You try to open a door and the door's locked. You just keep trying to open it. I know people who go up to a door, they try to smash the door down. They do. They just have to go, oh, by the way. This is that simple. So you start with the body because you want to be able to detect something that is so straightforward as, is the body experiencing pleasure or pain? That's it. Isn't that amazing? Do you know if the body is experiencing bliss or happiness, or is the body experiencing pain? You think that's simple. It turns out it's not. It's very difficult. And let me tell you why, because I promised in the poster you put out to explain the neurophysiology, the science behind this. Okay? So I'll do that. And it's actually, when you understand, it's very easy. When you, because it's not you anymore, it never was, but when a baby, a fetus, is in the womb, yeah, in the womb, the position of the body in space, where the body is and what the body is already beginning to get mapped. You know the word map? Mm-hmm. Map. You know road map? How, you know the map in the car? How to get to Zurich, how to get to Paris, how to get to Ruppertal, how to get back. You need a map, yes? Even if you know how to get to Paris, the map is internal after a while, right? First of all, you need a map. You open a map in a car, correct? Mm-hmm. And then eventually you don't need it because the map is internal, correct? You follow the internal map. Now we have GPS. Nobody follows the map. It's amazing. First thing they do is they turn on the GPS, go right, go left, go right, go left. And then if the GPS doesn't work, they go, oh. They don't know anymore where north is, where south is. They don't know, you know, they have to go on the GPS. I mean that too, because I meet people like that, and it's like, without the GPS, they cannot do anything because they don't know where north would be. Okay, so already when you are in the fetus, when you are a fetus, the mapping of where everything in the body is located, location, is already starting in the fetus. Interesting, eh? When you come out, it's very rapid, the mapping. You have to map, otherwise you cannot walk. You have to map, otherwise you cannot place your finger. See, I was 2 millimeters away. You can't place your finger in the water unless there is a map of everything around you and less than the millimeter of every part of the body internally and externally is mapped. Where is it mapped? You have to understand. This is very important. You have to understand. Where is it mapped? It's mapped in experience. It's in the nervous system. It's very, very precisely mapped. Every part of the body gets mapped. A baby is spending every day mapping. Why are they doing that for 2 hours? Or, ever see a baby? Like a good Feldenkrais practitioner, right? What does that do? They're mapping. And the mapping takes a long time. Because you sometimes, you know, the other day I was watching a baby. They were just walking. And they went, and they were just walking. Fine. They were like maybe 3 years old, 2.5, walking, and then like this. Just boom, crying. We were just sitting having a coffee somewhere, and this baby's walking, and all of a sudden just went, woo, right in the face. Like completely just, blah. Ah! What are they doing? They're mapping. And every once in a while, the map doesn't work. The map just doesn't work, and they fall over. Crunch. Or they walk, you know, you see them walk into a wall? Or they turn, you know, like birds sometimes, they fly into a window. But the map is wrong. So the map has to be updated, like GPS. You know, we were in New Zealand and trying to find this place. And Ben was using GPS. And it led us to a street that didn't exist. He goes, oh my God, I don't know where I am. I said, well, I do. That's north. We want to be in Kashmir. There's the map. Kashmir's over there. Let's just drive over there. We drove over there and found the street. But you know, it's like you need a map. So we spend a lot of time every day, both as children, teenagers, and adults, mapping, remapping, to the millimeter, to the fraction of a millimeter. It's amazing. You see in soccer or baseball, I don't know, you don't, maybe not so much baseball, but you see if a ball is hit and they're way away, you reach out like this, and the ball has a trajectory, and the person doesn't look at the ball. They just put the hand out like that. How does that happen? Or in dance, how does it happen? Or eventually with a musical instrument, how do the fingers get there? It's all mapped out. You have to get out of the way and let the map take over. Do you see? We do this all the time. Okay, now, that means... And we know this for sure. The experiments are very good in neurophysiology. And we could do this together. Last retreat for 4 months, we did these experiments to show people the mapping. You don't know where your body is, only the map. So when you say, my body, you have no body. You have maybe 100 or 200 maps built over time. Some of them are wrong. Now what happens is, in childhood and as a teenager, because of emotions and because of being trained, educated by parents, not so much anymore, parents, finished, but by society, school, the map becomes a conceptual map of what the body is, how it should look, how the body should feel. Each culture is different. Even Swiss culture is different than Canadian culture. English culture, very different. You see? And French culture, very, very different. You see? So every culture has different kinds of cultural maps to allow you to communicate and be in that culture. But they're conceptual maps, but they feel real. How you feel, what your body should look like, what its proportions, what is beauty, what is not beauty. How you are as a female, how you move your hand. You can train that. In a male, easy to train, to remap the hand movements, they look perfectly feminine. Even the voice can be changed, especially with a little operational, little nick here, little tiny operation for a male. Well, you can train the male to a completely feminine voice. It's fantastic. does is true. And especially with a little tiny operation, just a little nick. And you can change the voice, and it's completely feminine voice. The way I move my hair, my hand, can be mistaken completely as feminine. Those are maps. And we don't know, because we're not educated this way, nobody ever tells us, that they're just maps. They're not real. They're mentally held beliefs about how the body is and how it feels and where it is in space. Understand? Mm-hmm. How you feel on the floor, how big your body is a map. I guarantee you. We can take a machine called a magnetic cranial transducer. It's about this big, like a magnetic wand, and you place it over the brain, and the maps sometimes go like this. So you could literally be sitting here like this, sitting, and feel that you're up 50 feet.
Oh, that'd be
fun. Oh, yeah. You can do that with mirrors, too. You have three mirrors. Three mirrors is all it takes, and you can put your body so you feel like you're out by the tree, looking back. It's been done. So the feeling of the body, pleasurable, painful, how you feel in space, who you are, is a completely conceptual experience. But it doesn't feel that way. Do you understand? It is so deep. The illusion is so deep. Have you ever looked in the mirror? Who's looked in the mirror? Look at your body in the mirror. Your face and your body in the mirror. It is not how you see, how you look. It's not the same. And someone shows you a picture of you? It's not me. It's not you. How you experience yourself is maps, but they're not real maps. They have no basis in reality at all. There's not one person in this room who sees someone else in the room the same way. Not one person. This has been tested over and over and over again. This is like 30, 40 years of research. It's good. Does it make sense? Mm-hmm. So the body, the experience of the body gets twisted. You know what I mean by twisted? It gets twisted over time. It has nothing to do with reality after a while. It gets twisted. Twisted, 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 twisted. How you experience your body is breath. If the body gets so twisted, the maps are so twisted, what happens to the breathing? It shuts down. Always shuts down. It gets stiff. So one of the definitions of neurosis is rigidity. Do you know the word rigidity? Stiffness. This is not stiff. It bends. But neurosis, no bend. No bending. I will not move. If I don't move, I'm safe. And the muscles get very tight. Yeah? The body is tight. It doesn't want to move. It doesn't want to go. Yeah? This is one definition, but it's an old one. But the concept about the body and the who you are gets tighter and tighter and stiffer and stiffer and stiffer. So what do we do to unstiffen? What's the normal thing that a human being will do to unstiffen? You stretch. You see all these people in yoga, meditation? Remember the early days with Namjoo Rinpoche? When I first came to study with Namjoo Rinpoche, there would be a whole room of people going like this. The whole room. I'm not kidding you. They, before he came, I would sit there, and I'd be going. And they'd be doing every, because they're all doing, chiropractic adjustments. Right in the room. And they'd all be doing that. You hear the crunches. Twisting it. Always adjusting. So that's what you do. You keep adjusting because the map doesn't feel right. What else do you do? A million things to keep trying to unrigidify the map so it feels good. But as Namgyal Rinpoche said, you're not stupid, you're just not trained. So obviously they don't work. A little bit, you know, temporary. Go. Oh. I can't move my head, but I feel different. You know, it feels different. Now I have to really see the chiropractor. So always trying to adjust the map to feel better. But you see, after a while you find out it really doesn't, all it does is temporarily make it feel better. Because what you're really doing, and this will come out in time, you'll see, because I have to do it bit by bit. What you're doing is you're really trying to change the breathing, the map of the breathing. Because as soon as the breathing is total, that's number four. On the first one, section is total experience of total breathing. That's exactly what it means. So if you look at this, look at number four, calming the bodily formation, I shall breathe in, thus he trains them. The whole body. Number three, experiencing the whole body of breath, I shall breathe in. Experiencing a whole body of breath, not just your arm, not your finger, not your nose, the entire body of breath. You never feel the same again. It's big. So this is what we're trying to do. Spending the day coming away from anxiety and worry into what? A full body of breath. So you keep trying things. Get everything right to get the full body. You go fishing. As Simon says, you go fishing to experience the full body of breath. You don't experience the full body of breath, you get a little bit. Does it make sense? And for human beings, not every human being, but for a lot of human beings, the closest, besides drugs, the closest approach to the full body of breath is what? The closest for a human being.
Sex.
Non-drug, is sex. Is the closest approach most human beings will come to a full body of breath, if they can really do it. I don't mean sex. Full making love. Really full. Is the closest experience to the entire body breathing. That's why, you know, Wilhelm Reich, you know, that's all they were on about. Can you get the body to breathe? Full orgasm. But it was not liberation. Full orgasm. That was their idea. If your body can move and breathe, then you're happy. Turns out it's not true. But, okay. So that whole first section is to discover what it is to feel alive again in the body. And when you feel alive again in the body, what happens? This is very simple. So easy to understand. This is so elegantly simple. What do you discover when you breathe fully? Pleasure. Sounds very Freudian, doesn't it? It is. Because it's very primary, very primal. When you feel the whole body of breath, energy, energized, you feel alive, you feel pleasure, you feel so good. You feel just so incredibly good. The universe is perfect. Right? It is. It's easy. Everything's fine. You don't have to worry about anything. No time, no space, no past, no present. You don't have to think. Life is perfect. When your body feels, the map feels total. Total. The map has come back into what it was like when you were a child. Yeah. Then what do you discover? You discover this is a body that feels good, and now you can discriminate and say, aha, when I don't breathe, my body doesn't feel so good. Do you see? Now you begin to know what is pleasure and what is pain. What is sukha in Pali? What is sukha? What is dukkha in the body? And that's why the first work starts with the body. So you really know, you can go back and forth and go, sukha, dukkha, sukha, dukkha, sukha, dukkha. Because when you take a full body of breath, it's going to be interrupted. It's going to be transient. It's not going to last. My knee, evil knee, evil ankle, evil hip. Yeah? Evil back. Oh. Neck. You see? Or stomach. Oh, belly. Oh. You get to experience what the body's like when it is not breathing. And you go back and forth and back and forth. Now, so in number three, experiencing the whole body of breath, I shall breathe in. Thus, you train in discovering how you actually experience the whole body of breath. You train. Not once. I got it. You know, Western thing is, I got it. Yeah, well, the way I was trained is, go, can you do it all day long? Every day. Come on. Train. Not, I got it. I got it once. Good. Okay. So what? Can you do it all day long? Do you know how to do it? You see? You have to train. But once you've discovered it, then you see, you know how to calm. You know how to calm the bodily formation. You know what is the calm body experience. The map that has come back. The map that has reintegrated. The unified map. That you have to have. A reference. You have to have a reference. Like drinking really good water. You know, maybe you've never had good water. And one day you have good water. You go, oh my God, that's possible. Awesome. I won't talk about coffee yet. Okay. Well, I'll tell you a story. It's true. When I was in New Zealand, someone came along. They wanted to study with me. Came along, and we were having coffee. And I said, would you like coffee? No. Don't drink coffee. It's not good for me. So, okay. And next day, would you like to have a coffee? No. Every time I have a coffee, I get very upset stomach. I don't feel very good. I don't like coffee. It's not good for me. Okay, so we have coffee. Third day. Would you like a coffee? He goes, well, I'll start learning how to make a coffee. He says, boy, that smells good. I said, maybe you've never had a good coffee. Oh, I've had a good coffee. You can tell it's a male. They always tell it's a male. I've had a good coffee. So but he says, you know, I know what it does. It makes me feel awful. Any coffee, I've had many coffees. So maybe day four or five, we made a coffee. I said, why don't you try? You know, maybe, okay, if you get sick, I apologize, but just see what it's like. Oh, that's good. And afterwards, I feel good. I feel good. I said, well, maybe you've never actually had a good coffee. You see? The map, this is why I deal with this all day long with people. The map of the coffee experience was twisted. All you have to do is introduce, like a Wangkor. Yeah? This is the process of Wangkor. You introduce the high-level map. You introduce the new map. So when Jamie was experimenting on you this morning, when he was showing you things or helping you with explorations, what was he doing? He was helping you, not by telling you, but allowing your body, your map, to shift. And when the new map comes in, the breathing changes. This is simple. It's very, very direct. You have to find a way for the old map that doesn't work to allow the new map to come in that works. It can be a day, it can be an hour, it can be 10 minutes, it can be 3 days. But the old map has to go. And the old map is not going to go by doing the same thing over and over again. You have to trick. Literally, you have to trick. You have to be conniving, you know. Just try the coffee. You have to put in a new map. And sometimes the new map doesn't feel good. It does not feel good. It feels awful. Like a medicine. And then eventually you go, whoa. Because the old map doesn't want to let go. So this is why you don't want to meditate. I'm telling you, this is why you don't want to do this. Because the old map is what you know. The new map is frightening. It's anxiety producing. The body starts to shake. The body starts to not feel comfortable. Why? Because it's a new energy. So when you come to me and say, I'm vomiting in meditation, I go, oh, congratulations. If you're throwing up, I go, excellent. Because the body has to physically readjust the map. And it doesn't feel good all the time. Start crying. You know, crying maybe for one day. Crying. Excellent sign. Laughing. I can't stop laughing. You know, giggles, 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 giggles. This is a good sign. Because the map is falling apart. But usually it takes... we have to fool the nervous system into letting go the old map because it just does not want to go. So, if you want to turn the hand over in a new way, you only know one way, the way you've known for 30 years. Right? Turn the hand over. Try it. Just turn your hand over. You just do it over and over again. It doesn't change anything. I tell you, I can change your hand by rotating your left foot. It's faster. If you learn to rotate your left foot, you will change your hand movement faster than doing this over and over and over again. Guaranteed. The fastest way to the hand is through the foot and the opposite foot, not the same side. You have to find a way in to change the map. Okay? So this method of Anapanasati is by breathing, you sit or stand or walk or lie down, and the first thing you want to do... What time is it? Okay, fine. We want... This is contact. So you start with something that touches the body. Anywhere on the body is okay. It turns out this is the best. Here or here is overall the best way in for most human beings. It turns out through history. Okay, experiment. This is very good because it's less emotional than this. When we go here, it brings up a lot of deep stuff. If we go here, it's a little bit, maybe slower sometimes, but it's more even. More even. And I'll explain why. It's very, very straightforward. Why? Here. Okay? So you want to begin to start touching again. It's interesting, eh? But not like this. You could do that. But what you want to do is you want to touch subtle. And feel, not breath, the air. And this is subtle here. To where you can start here and bring the sensation all the way to the tips of your toes, to the tips of your fingers, every part of your body, internally, externally. You have to start somewhere. You could start here. In Qigong, sometimes they start in the kidney point here, in the feet. In Qigong, often start in here and the feet, to bring in prana, to bring in sensation. In Anapanasati, the way the Buddha taught it, not so. Here. And there's a reason. I'll explain why. Making sense? So it is touch. Touch, 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 touch. Learning to touch. Not somebody else, but natural. Just how it is. And you study, you watch and you study until the breath, the map, changes. It's the awareness that does the change. So, did you explain to them? If you were listening to Jamie, the only way you get it's effective is if your mindfulness is good. If you go like this, or it does no good at all. It's an exercise. But if you actually look and you pay attention, close attention, and you pause, and you do it again, and you pause. Do it again, and you pause. And you do other things. The map will start to change. It's the mindfulness that changes the map, not the exercise. What am I going to do for lunch? That does nothing. It does nothing. Then you may as well do sports. Yeah? With a Walkman? You know, go running with a Walkman? Or, you know, play the clarinet with a Walkman? You play a Mozart concerto and you listen to Alice Cooper. Or you listen to the news. It's important because I got to listen to the news and I got to practice, you know? So you listen to the news and you play the clarinet. It's just playing the clarinet, right? See how it works? So this method is allowing the breath, and it's the awareness, it's the sati that's important. Awareness of breath will change the maps because you're paying close attention. So if you can write that down or remember this, the most important thing in meditation is not the number of hours, although that's important, but you need two things. Well, actually, I usually teach four. I'm going to start with two things right away. Okay? First two things. You must have this. Otherwise, all meditation fails. You have to pay close attention and long enough. That's meditation. Not contemplation. But you need that for contemplation too. You have to do two things. You have to pay close attention, like this. You have to be interested. So we could now say three things. We could say close attention. Do you know what I mean by close attention? Mm-hmm. You know, you watch something very closely. Mm. And you watch it for long enough. And then you need one more thing. Well, there's one more, but later. You must be interested. If you're not interested, it fails. If you're not interested in meditation, you shouldn't meditate. As far as I'm concerned. Unless you're a pure faith type. That's rare. Then it's different. But if you're not interested in meditation, then why are you meditating? Because you won't pay close attention. And like anything, for it to work, to ripen, you must spend enough time for the map to change. Otherwise, you never give it a chance. You're always doing the same map again and again and again and again and again, and it can't change. This is how it works. And a good meditation teacher is able to shift the map fast through instructions, as opposed to 10 years doing the same thing. That's all. By giving a new theme. Why don't you look at this? Oh, I wouldn't look at that. No, I don't want to do that. Oh, okay. Why don't you make croissants? I'm not interested. I'll try making them so they get interested. I'll ask the book. You see? But if you're very interested, you ask the questions. You go searching. How do you make it more efficient, faster? You change the map. Don't do the same thing over and over again for 10 years. You don't need to. Maybe not even for a week. Maybe not even for 3 days. But there must be enough time of close attention, of interest, and
long enough.
Interest. Yeah? Long enough. for the map to shift. And you have to be patient, because we never know quite how long. Can always predict a little bit, maybe 3 days, a week, 1 day. It depends on the person. But you have to be patient for the map to shift. And then you go, oh my God. Did anybody have this morning feel good? Yeah. The map shifted. And if you keep doing that and learning, eventually it becomes natural. Just natural. This is not so hard to understand. It really isn't. It's very, very basic. If it was complicated, then forget it. You should just be suspicious if it's complicated. I always say, if it's something really complicated, things don't need to be so complicated. Maybe at CERN, they're complicated. But can still be explained. Always be explained. Any questions so far? Even you need touch. So are you seeing the fly? Or can you actually feel the fly? So when you eat for your lunch, are you conceptualizing the food? Or are you really tasting food? You try that and see. You will find that most people, when they eat, they don't eat. They visualize food. They conceptualize food. It's not real food. That's why that Cafe Faro, Mr. Faro, he says, they don't know coffee, so I just make them a blend. Because the discrimination is not there. Most people don't eat food. They think food. They think body, but they don't feel body. The body is a thinking thing. It's not actually felt. This is not easy to do, to actually feel a full body and know what it feels like to have a body back. To bring the body back so it actually feels natural. It feels alive. It feels alive. It breathes. It breathes. Alive is breath. Then what happens to the mind? When the body is relaxed and feels alive, what happens to the mind? Oh, it's easy. It's clear. This is so natural. This is not artificial meditation. It's a natural process. Each number is naturally unfolding the same way in massage. If you go for a massage and it's a good massage, eventually you'll feel very relaxed, the mind will settle, and you'll have less thoughts, and you'll be, whoa. Right? You go, whoa. Because you've been in touch. In touchment, breath. This is really how it works. But you have to learn to do that yourself. How many massages, you'll run out of money. Unless you are very wealthy, and have a massage 3 times a day, you'll run out of money. You have to learn how to massage yourself by breath. So you start here. Why here? Anybody know why? Why here? Why this spot?
Because of the two channels.
Because of the two channels. Yeah. Well, you see, you say you have a body. But what do you know about the body? The body is full of nerves, yes? Nerves? How many nerves are in the body? A lot of nerves. How many blood vessels? A lot of blood vessels. How many? The body is full of things that communicate. Communicate. Has everybody in the room had acupuncture? Everybody had acupuncture? No? That's good to go. You should go for acupuncture. Even if nothing wrong, just go for acupuncture. Yeah, just go and say, I want to have acupuncture. Explore acupuncture. I used to do that. I used to have a friend, a very good acupuncturist, a student of Rinpoche, and I would just go once every 2 weeks to experience each meridian, to work on each meridian to detect. Yeah, I was studying Chinese medicine a bit. And so in the Chinese system of traditional Chinese medicine, the body has 12 main meridians, like little rivers, like little currents that run through. But there's many more. In the Hindu tradition, 300,000. In the Buddhist tradition, 84,000 or 72, depending on which tradition. Okay? Right? Lots. Now, those channels, some of you, have you ever felt the insertion point? What it feels like? The spot when you hit the spot, it's like, whoa! And can you ever feel it go travel? That's the acupuncture meridian. So there are 12 channels, there's 24 channels, and there's many, many thousands of channels in acupuncture, except only the main acupuncture channels are usually used. Understand? For healing. Okay. When it comes to the deepest work of opening the mind, clearing the mind, in the tradition of Buddhist meditation, and also in Qigong, later in Qigong, or Buddhist Qigong, you only need 3 meridians to clear everything. All the rest are side ones, which you don't really need to do. They will clear if you work with the 3. Okay? So we normally, most of the time, focus on 3, most of the time, for the deepest clearing of the mind and the body. Normally in Chinese medicine, they do not work with these channels. They're for later work. Okay, and there's 2 channels that start right here, the tip of the nose. And they run approximately, depending on the person, they're very fine, and they run like this into here and usually get squeezed right here, like this. Hard as a rock, right here. Then they travel straight through, not like this curve, straight through to here. And then they go down in front of the spine. In front, the spine is here. They go down like this. I started with 1, but I want 3. So they are like this, and they should be. They're not real. They are energetic. So you won't find them. You will not be able to find them in science because they're actually not real. Real. They're very fine. Acupuncture meridians you can actually detect. These ones are very subtle, but they're deep. So the 3 of them are very close, like this. And they sit in front of the spine, not in the spine, they sit in front of the spine. Maybe about, depends, you have to find, about this far, in front of the spine, sometimes this far. But the two side ones start right here. And that is why Anapanasati starts at the nose, or the upper lip. You can start here. Why? Because you want to open these. Because this carries the deepest part of life, energy. This carries conditioning, a lot of what we call this is the 3 roots. This carries the conditioning of the deepest form of rage, anger, aggression, and the left, greed, lust, greed, lust, jealousy, envy, all these, not envy, jealousy, wanting, here. And the center is wisdom, is either dullness, dull, or sleepy, just, or wisdom, clear, liberated mind. So in Buddhist energy meditation, you only really need these 3. There are more, which we will do. Not so much in this retreat, but these will branch off into others, which you also have to do. But by opening these, everything opens. It's the deepest healing. So if you cannot heal by acupuncture with the 24, you will have to go here. this is, as one very famous Chinese Tibetan doctor said to me, the only way for some the deepest disturbances is here. That means you have to become enlightened. And even if you become enlightened, it still may not heal. Because it's just the deepest layer. Until death, until after death. Making sense? So we start here to do what? Open these up. That's the reason. It's still not insight. When the body has the full body of breath, number three, these two, the side ones, the two side, they open right up, all the way through. Maybe for 1 second, 2 seconds. And you feel alive. And then they close down, and you go. This one comes later. This one comes at number 12. This opens at number 12. These open earlier.
It's the number 12?
On your sheet.
Oh.
Number 12. So this is lots of information for you, yes? Are you following along okay?
Yes.
It's pretty simple, isn't it? Yeah. So we start touching here, not just because it's the surface of the skin, but because we not only want to feel the body contact, but we also want the inner body contact, which is much more subtle, which will carry the breath very, very deep through the body, and you will feel very alive. Because the deepest part of the rigidity, you know, the stiffness, are these channels. When they are twisted, when they're twisted, that is where you get, I'll give me an example. You know this fireplace? Have you ever seen a chimney fire? Mm-hmm. Who has seen a chimney fire? Ever seen one?
Wangapeka.
Yeah. Wangapeka. You saw one there? Which cabin?
In the main building.
The main building. Oh, that's to be the second fire. They had a fire once because of that. It's very dangerous. The way that a chimney fire starts, usually, is because softwood, and at Wangapeka it's softwood, the radiata, they burn the radiata, not all softwood, but lots of softwood, is when the softwood burns, it forms, you know, creosote? Mm-hmm. You know, thick tar? Mm-hmm. Like thick black tar. And it gets in the pipe. And if it gets too thick, it will catch fire. And that whole thing will, it goes like this. Turns all red. The tube will turn red, and it will start like this, and it can burn the whole house down. Burn the whole building down. Of course, Wangapeka, you could burn the entire place down. It's very dangerous. Yeah? So you're supposed to clean the pipe out. Right? You're supposed to, every 6 months or every year, check the pipe and clean it out. Otherwise, you get fire. Now, what happens when you get a fire? What's the other word for fire in our body?
Angry.
No?
Rage.
Inflamed. When you get hot, you start to burn, you get inflamed. You know irritation? Inflammation. Yeah? Immune response, inflammation. So you start to burn, you start to swell, and the body gets very hot, and you get rage. Because the body hurts. The mind hurts. It's exactly the same thing. So all these tubes, 300,000 tubes, 84,000 tubes, 72,000 tubes, they are stuck with conditioning. All the mental conditioning, the maps, and the concepts get stuck in the tubes, like creosote, black tar. And when you breathe, it's very simple, you'll see. You meditate enough, you'll see. If you don't breathe, it's stuck. And someone says, "You twit." And you go, "I am not." Just like that. Right? You can trigger that. You know, a person, you can trigger. Like, you know, couples, they do that. Roger. "I am not." Ah! And they fight. And they go, "What are you doing?" You know? One time a student told me, very good, lovely person. Her and her partner, they were in the kitchen having a fight. And she didn't think about it. She took the big iron pan and she went like this. And just as, he was only very close, just as she was going, she stopped. Went, oh my God. Oh my God. She could have killed him. That's what I mean. That's the stovepipe on fire. Burning. Burning. With greed, lust, jealousy, rage, pride, you name it. Delusion, deluded, fantasy, stories. And it burns. It burns. It's on fire. And then it settles down eventually. Maybe 1 hour, 20 minutes, 2 days, 3 days. It settles down and it vanishes. You think, okay, everything's fine. And then the trigger comes again. Like this. Did you see? All that is stored in the body, in the energy body, and in the body. So you have to go layer by layer by layer by layer by layer. As it frees, they disappear. How do you know they're for real? It disappears because they're gone. When someone says, you twit, you go, thank you. That's very nice. They say, you're an idiot. That's very kind. Thank you very much. You laugh or you just go, yeah, true. I'm an idiot. I know. And so are you. But the flames are not there. The flames are not there. They're gone. They get burnt out. So all these tubes need to be blown out with breath. And cleared. Cleared. This is the process. This is the called purification. You heard the word? Purification. Purification. To clean out all the tubes so the mind, body, emotions act clear. Clear. Loving, clear, open, natural. Not artificial. Not because you've learnt some Buddhist technique. Not because you're a Buddhist. Buddhists can be the worst, you know. Just go. Prick them. Buddhist, you can always prick. Ah! I thought you were a Buddhist. Oh, yes. Oh, money pay me hung. Oh, money pay me. Oh, money pay me. Oh, money pay me. Oh, money pay me. It's not purification. Yes?
But how, when it's not pured yet, how do you react? How do you work with it when the anger comes? Because I'm used to flatten it down and I know it's not good. So just get into it.
Nope.
With awareness. What?
Yeah. You see, this is a dilemma. The normal response, especially since the 1960s, is you emote. You get it out. Emote it. Emote it. Emote it. Right? Especially on other people. Yeah. Are you? And you're supposed to share it. Since the 1960s, you're supposed to share your emotions. Get them out. You see where I'm coming from. But it's not, it's bad. It's not good. And also, it never clears it. You see? So the process is you start with antidotes. Do you know the word antidote? Antidote. Like a, you go to the apothecary and you get an antidote.
Apothec,
yeah. You get an antidote. The antidote makes you feel better, but it doesn't solve the problem. You have to solve the problem. Now, because we have had this tradition, we think you're bad, so you say, I'm bad, I'm doing something wrong. So you try to think your way out of the emotional problem, right? Why am I angry? So you think for hours about being angry, and why am I angry? And why did they do it? But I'm not good, so I really... You think. It just does not do any good. Okay? So how do you purify? You have to purify at the level by which your body breathes and feels the freedom And now, how do you keep that open? That's the trick. How do you keep the... may as well hold this for the entire... How do you keep this open? Once you put the cleaner through, you know, like a pipe cleaner? And you're going... You know, when you breathe, you have no anger, right? You love everybody. The universe loves you, correct?
Mm-hmm.
You feel it? Feel that? The whole world, the universe is perfect. It's like, oh, man, it's perfect. Nothing could be better. How do you keep that open?
Awareness.
It's only through awareness that it stays open. You stop doing that which leads to that state. And that's why all the meditation. You have to catch the sensation before it grows. That's awareness. I will speak more on this because this is a big topic. This is huge. And that comes the next section. But first of all, you have to have a base in the body with its breathing. So one method that's used a lot is called distraction yoga. I call it distraction yoga. It's as simple, it's distraction yoga.
I love distraction.
He loves distraction yoga, okay? If you're angry, then you do something that replaces the anger with something else, so it takes your mind away. That is actually compassionate. That's compassion. Why? Because to go direct route of awareness and breath is maybe too subtle, too refined. So you go do something that actually is stronger than the anger. Like you're angry, so you jump in the cold water and go for a swim. And faster. Or go for a run. Yeah. Something. Something, maybe kendo, aikido. Go dance. Go play your, you know, something that you know frees up your breathing. That's all it is, by the way. Frees up your breathing. Where the hormones go down. It's just a hormonal reaction. You see, there's so much to cover. People are scared of their bodies. They're really scared. So what? You have a physical reaction. You idiot! Body goes. But you see, if you breathe and you meditate, you want to be able to feel. Now this is insight. You see, it doesn't clear by calm. It clears by insight. Do you follow? I must say this again and again. But if you're asking the question, how do you end it? How do you finish it? It's through insight, through awareness. But it's not through awareness. It's questions, what are you aware of? Now watch the difference. Here, I'll show you the difference.
I'm really mad.
Now, that rage is a physical sensation. Yes? It's physical. And is it mental? Yes. You might be thinking about something. You might be feeling something. Yes? Emotions. Tell me what is going to happen to the body and what is going to happen. Now, calm, tranquility, antidote is what? Jump in the water. Go dance. Play music. Make love. Have some good food. Go have a glass of wine and you'll feel better. Okay? Antidote. Or even meditate. Or go do yoga. Something. Right? Meditate. That's the antidote. Now watch what happens when it comes to insight. What is going to happen if I sit here and my body feels awful? It's full of jealousy. I am jealous. What's going to happen? What's going to happen?
A lot of tension.
Yeah, but what's going to happen? See, this is the difference. Insight. What's going to happen? It's going to pass away. That's all. It came up, and it's going to disappear. It's going to disappear. 1 minute, 2 minutes, 3 minutes, 4 minutes, 5 minutes, 6 minutes, 7 minutes, 10 minutes, 20 minutes, a half an hour, 2 hours, 1 hour. Who cares? But the insight, wisdom, is it's going to vanish. Do you see? You're not scared. If you're scared, well, I've got to do something with it. I've got to do something with it. It's bothering me. I feel, ugh, I feel awful. I feel icky. Your skin is crawling. You know, you've got chemicals, hormones, cortisone and corticosteroids and, you know, it running through the body and the dopamine changes, everything. It's like, ugh, ah, right? And you want to do something, correct? You want to run, you want to scream, so you emote. Ah! You think that's going to work. It doesn't. It only temporarily lowers it down. So how do you stop it? How do you end it? Like this. You don't move. And you watch it pass. And you see the beginning, you listen very careful about insight. You catch it at the moment it starts because the mindfulness is very good. That's why you have to train in mindfulness. You catch it at the moment it begins and you see its very end. If you don't, you lose it. That's how purification really happens. The other is the antidote. The way you dissolve the states is the beginning and the end, especially the end. So this is why I wrote this, to remind people practicing insight, all the fundamentals. If you don't see the end, you will see the beginning again. I like that.
Sounds
one.
Good.
That was a good one. Okay, that was good. If you don't, you must see the very moment of ending, death, cessation, 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 cessation. Otherwise, you never develop confidence that everything ends. And then it gets shorter and shorter and shorter and shorter and shorter. Eventually, the trigger does not set off the anger. There's nothing for it to actually. So if you want to purify the karmic, the karma, the activity in the channels is done through insight, not through antidote. Antidote helps. If you can't do the insight, do the antidote. It's important to learn the antidotes. Loving kindness. Go practice loving kindness. Go do something nice for people. Go start a fire. Go make a coffee. Make a nice meal for everybody. Go run. Go sailing. Something. Don't spread it. It's like a virus, you know? Emotional states are viral. They infect people. It is not compassionate to ever spread emotional states because they affect everybody. They're like poison. That's why we call them poison. Yeah, they're called kalesas, poisons. So to keep this open, you have to use insight. That is, that all things pass. That's one aspect. So this I will get to. You see? Now what happens, you practice breathing meditation and you feel wonderful. Full body breath. And what happens? It passes.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So now we can switch over to insight. The full body of breath is what kind of meditation? Tranquility meditation, loving kindness. You see? I train in feeling great. No, I feel great. That is tranquility meditation. Does not liberate. You get very, very good at the full body of breath. You know how it starts, you know how it ends, you know how to do it. Good yoga is yoga. Okay? That's not liberation. What is liberation? You watch it rise, you watch it fall, but you do not react. You watch it rise, you watch it fall. You never react. You do not move. You stay unmoved. If it's blissful, fine. If it's not, fine. It doesn't matter. because you don't care whether it's blissful or not blissful. You're watching the coming into being and the falling away. Over and over and over. That is the purification. That leads to this. Naturally. Without doing anything. When these are clear, you don't have to do anything. You don't need to even meditate. No more meditation if these are open. The meditation's always there. Yoga, Hatha Yoga, was always designed, Hatha, sun, moon, Hatha, sun, moon, to straighten and open these two channels. That's Hatha Yoga. Was the meditation, the physical and mental activity to straighten these, keep these straight, so you can meditate. So insight is what? It hurts.
But it doesn't affect.
But it doesn't affect. It's just physical sensation coming and going. You're not moved. You see it begin. You see it end. The finger hurts. It has a beginning and it has an end. And sometimes like this. Boom, 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 boom. On, off, on, off, on, off, on, off. Only the mind that is dull sees it as continuous. The mind that has great mindfulness sees pain go like this. With every cluster of thoughts, it goes like this. When the mind relaxes, it goes. And one more. There's three aspects. That it changes, that there is suffering, and then not suffering, and then what else? That there's nothing there. Remember, it's a map. You see? So you get frightened of anger, you get frightened of jealousy, you get frightened of greed. What are you frightened of? A mental map. That's all. Now I'm talking about emotions, right? So when you have an emotion, it feels very real, correct? It's not. It's a map. The body's a map, and the mental experience is a map. Once you know that, you're not frightened. Good, bad, who cares? You just watch it rise, you watch it fall. You're not moved. Because you know actually what it is. Before that, you're fooled. You think it's real. I've got an emotion. Of course you've got emotion, so what? I don't care. Just don't spread it. I'm bothered. Fine. So let it go away. But I got to do something. No, you have to do nothing. Watch. If you're bothered, what do? Nothing. And it vanishes. What's the fastest way to get those clouds to disappear? What's the fastest way?
Rocket.
No, the sun comes out. Just burns them off. The sun is the awareness. Whenever there is awareness, the states cannot stay the same. They must dissolve. With awareness, all states will change and dissolve. But it's not enough. You have to have the insight into anicca, dukkha, anatta. I'll get there. So each of these stages can be enough for liberation if you use insight. But each of these stages is progressive for developing the training of the calm to do really good insight. Okay? So if your breathing is not deep enough, is not open enough, then insight keeps falling apart because you can't stay close attention. Long enough and deep enough, because you're always getting emotionally involved. Did you fall? You get shaken. Oh, what was that? And even bliss is the worst. Beautiful light. Sailboat. Oh my God, that's so beautiful. That is so amazingly beautiful. Wow. Oh, you just lost it. So bliss is the worst, is the most difficult, not the other. The other stuff, that anger, that's easy. It's the bliss that's harder, because the addiction, because people are human beings are wired for pleasure. Very difficult. That becomes the higher work to do, is to remove the clinging to bliss. But first of all, you need bliss. First of all, we need to get you addicted to bliss, and then we have to take you off the addiction. The bliss is the training to be like clear, absolutely unmoved, clear, and loving life, but not moved. You have to be unmoved, unshaken, because you'll get shaken. You'll get shaken. When the energy starts moving and it starts to clear, did anybody feel, did you ask this morning? Did anybody, when they were doing whatever Jamie was doing with you, feel uncomfortable? A little bit disturbed? No? Did you, some of it? Yeah. You just keep doing it, but you don't be afraid. See, that's the thing. You have to not be afraid. You just go, physical sensation, rising, falling. Just keep doing it and let it pass. Let it pass. I think that's lots for this morning. That's the first tetra. One, done. But we started, we've already started on the second, this, because of your question. We started on the second. Any questions? Then I'll finish for today. Almost 12 o'clock. Yes?
In kind of neuroscientific understanding, there's the understanding that synapses get pathway connections,
yep,
be get made in,
yep,
in the brain. And,
yep,
and there's a relationship between the different parts of the brain, the sort of core brain, which is very instinctual, fight or flight, and the sort of frontal cortex, which is able to process for children,
yep,
in particular. That's something that's got to develop. So, experience with that, the experience of training, repeating, what, you know, trying to get her to understand what's going on, but just that repeated pattern making is a technique, which at this stage, certainly for her, is not so much about insight on her part, it's just training.
You're trying to make good, at this point, you're trying to make good maps that are better than the other maps. You're not talking about insight. As you, for a child developing, you're not interested in insight. You try to make the best environment of the best maps you can according to your knowledge and your knowledge and cultural background. So the person, when they become an adult, has an easier time. That's what we do as parents. I'm not a parent, but as sometimes I am. But as a parent, you're trying to create, if you're a good parent, the best possible environment and the best internal maps possible, so the child and the adult has at least not so difficult a time. Life is difficult anyways. By the way, for everybody, no matter how good a parent you are, life is difficult. We all are damaged goods. Do you understand? The brain is way too complicated. The whole body is way too complicated to be perfect. We all have disabilities. We all have difficulties. That's part of life. So the most fundamental thing about the brain is it's very plastic. It's extremely plastic. Even as an adult, it's plastic. So the question is, which maps? And some, because of genetics, might even say past lifetimes, but anyways, genetics, get very stuck. And those take a long time, a lot of patience to shift, and may only be really shifted as an adult. Everybody comes in the world with their set of stuff. And sometimes it has to run its course. So as a parent, the only thing you can do is be loving and compassionate and try to do your best and realize that's an individual with a lot of push from other things. And they're going to have the responsibility as an adult to free themselves. But the only thing as a parent you can do is try the best you can to provide the best maps possible. At least put them out on the table. Just put them on the table. It's the human being that has to eventually make the decision to open up. So you spend time. You're doing your great. It's good. Neurophysiologically, you have to be very, very careful of old models that were never true. Neurophysiologically, there's almost no such thing as a central processing for anything at all in the brain. It all gets lifted. All those synapses. There's about only for nerves, and most of the connections in the brain are not nerves. They're glial cells. Okay? But for nerves alone, there are about 10 to the 80 synaptic connections. That's more atoms than there are in the known universe. Isn't that amazing? You think about it. There's more connections in one human brain than there are the calculated number of atoms in the whole known universe. The flexibility is unbelievable. But once the patterning begins, that's where the energy goes. That's where the energy goes. It just goes the easiest way. It knows. Over and over and over and over again. But it's completely plastic. It is completely plastic. And the other thing about this is you have to realize the way it works is this is very difficult until you do a lot of deep insight meditation. And now we know it from neurophysiology too. Is when we have an experience, it's a very quick arising in the brain, which also sends chemicals to the body because there's no separation. But it's a very fast arising for maybe 30 milliseconds, 31,000ths of a second, and falls away. So it gets built and falls, built and falls, built and falls. And it's not located anywhere. It's located like a like multiple processors in space and just falls open and has to get rebuilt again and again. Like you, your experience of you is rebuilt every 10 milliseconds. Bow, 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 and falls away. And there's nothing there. I don't know if you know that. But every at least 100 milliseconds, there's no you present. It's completely gone. It just falls away. So that experience in the mind is rising and falling, rising and falling. It has to be just shifted. That's all. It's just a question of shifting. And sometimes it's very stuck, right? It's very stuck. So you try to provide the best environment for the unstuckness to happen. That's the best thing. It's the best thing. And there's genetics. And the genetics are sometimes there that lay down tracks that are very hard to shift. And they have to come later. Is that what you're asking about? Yeah, it's very plastic. I'll give you an example. If you have a stroke and you lose your voice, until recently, it's finished. You're done. You know that? Yeah. If you go to a doctor, most of the time they'll say, you will never regain your speech. But that's not true. So the method that's now used, or has been used for experimentally, and has worked quite well for about 10 years, is you have to find another part of the brain that will allow the speech to come in and work on it that has not been damaged. So for instance, the singing, the speech center is a different center than the singing center. The singing center is located over here. And the speech center is a different center. So the method that's used more and more now for a stroke patient, not a stroke victim, but a stroke patient, not keen on that word, is use the singing center, which is undeveloped except for professional singers. Only professional singers have a developed singing center. So you use the singing center to get back the nerves in the speech center. Just use it. So almost everything in the brain has multifunctionality. You just have to find, this is the whole thing about curing the brain. You have to find a way in. That's what our problem is today. In so many ways, is you have to find a way in and trick the brain to use a different area. So, the method that's used, and of course in Feldenkrais, it's used a lot, is you have to go and stop the part that is habitually being used to find a new area that will take it over. A new map. So for instance, if this hand is paralyzed, saying to the patient, use your hand over and over again, will not work. Because the nerves for this hand, which are over here, are you following?
Mm-hmm.
The ones for here are over here. They have now been taken over by what? This one that works. Within 2-3 weeks to a month, the nerves that control this hand get switched over, because you can't let nerves sit. They get taken over by the ones for this arm. So watch what's happening. I did this with a Parkinson's patient recently. Okay? Same thing. This is weak. It doesn't feel right. But you watch what the other hand is doing. It's always going for the cup. Now, as this weakens, this hand is coming in, and even if it's not being used, it's moving. You see? And it's growing. It's taking all the nerve connections from here and putting them here where it feels comfortable. You see? It feels comfortable. There's less anxiety. This produces, I had to do this with a student who's suffering from Parkinson's, early Parkinson's. This area produces anxiety because it doesn't feel right. This area still feels fine, so what do? Always pick up the cup with the left hand. Does that make sense? Go to the least resistance. Okay, watch. What do you have to do with this hand? You must stop this hand from moving. You have to immobilize this hand because it's taking over the nerves from this side. So you have to take the hand and you have to tie it up. You have to immobilize it. It has to be stopped from being used long enough for the nerves to come back and be used in this hand. And that can take 4 or 5 hours a day. First I had playing piano, learning to play piano, and then learning to play piano, one arm tied up, and then in retreat, tying up his hand, and learning to always use his hand. And it's fantastic, the coming back of this hand. And then with Chinese, met with my Chinese doctor, he got his face, you know, in Parkinson's, the face gets very stiff, falls, all stiff. That was hard to get at. After, what was it, 2 months? Well, I think 2 months in retreat.
Is there 2 months?
2 months. 2 months in retreat. When he went to see my Chinese doctor, she did some acupuncture, and his face just opened up.
Mm-hmm.
But completely. Just like, opened right up. He was ready. So you have to trick the brain into getting rid of the old map, because the anxiety, in Anna's case, it's just a question of anxiety. The anxiety is too high to go a new way. So you have to immobilize, find a way in, so that the new map will take over. And long enough for the new map to take over. This is for everything we do. Meditation's the same. This is my, I think, some of the difficulty with psychotherapy too, is sometimes not enough time. The sessions maybe should be 5 hours long, 4 hours long, 3-4 times a week. You almost have to keep someone in the right environment long enough so that they get used, they get through the anxiety and the nervous system gets used. And we know this from stroke patients, that 2 hours, 1 hour a day is not enough. 3, 4, 5 hours a day is enough to change the brain. And for the adult brain, it takes 24 hours to 48 hours for the new synapses to grow, because you actually have to grow those synapses. So we know how long it takes, just like in music. I do better if I leave something, you know, da 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 da. If it's not going well, I leave it. Mm-hmm. I come back, I wait 24 hours, mm-hmm. and it goes much better. And I don't do anything, mm-hmm. and it goes better. Mm-hmm. All I need to do is just practice inside. Da 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 da. And all of a sudden, wow, it's working. Because it takes 24 hours to get those synapses to grow. Just fighting it and pushing it doesn't necessarily do any good. And the best thing you can do is sleep. Because sleep builds memory. The fastest way to build memory is relaxation, not stress. Stress does not build memory. Does not build associations, does not build new synapses. Stress hormones kill new synapses. Corticosteroids, which are produced in the body, kill, well, actually they're good for healing anxiety, but that's a funny thing. But if you produce anxiety around the new learning, it doesn't work well. And you need a period of rest to have the nervous system stitch together the neurons, the synapses. We know this be the case. The best thing you can do for learning is you relax, not stress. Because those stress hormones damage, they cause damage in the brain, especially forgetfulness. There's many methods. Learning by stress is not a good way to learn. Learning by love is a very good way to learn. I think that's plenty for this morning. So this afternoon, we'll take a few hours off. See you this evening. This evening, a class, I want you to actually have time to practice. Not long sessions. Do not, I want you to be, whatever you do, straight back, not rigid, straight back. You can sit like this, I don't care. You can sit like this, it's more comfortable. Chair is fine. You can stand, you can lie down, I don't mind. Walk slowly, very slowly. But I want you to start to place your attention here and feel sensation. Short sessions, 20 minutes to 1/2 hour only, not long. But never stop doing it. So even when you get up, it doesn't break. That's why you have to go slow. So there's no such thing as not meditating now. Okay? If you sit and you eat, you're still here. You're feeling everything, and you want to go so slow like a snail, like escargot, mm-hmm. escargot, or a slug, very slow. Why? Because you're going to be feeling the sensation here, not breath, sensation, the feel here, and it takes hours. Every time you lose it, it has to build again. This is the secret. If you get distracted, you lose the building up of the prana. You want to, like a baby, hold the baby and never drop the baby. They don't do well when they drop, I hear. Yeah? So you want to be very careful that you nurture the sensation here, even if it's very delicate, by never breaking it, but have short sessions so you feel refreshed, you don't get bored. Okay? Because when you get up, you never stop. Watch, you finish meditating, and now you get up. Same thing. You don't stop meditating.
It's just the movement you change.
You just change movements. So you, and this will come in the text, bending, stretching, moving. You never ever break the meditation. It's all continuous for 20 hours, 15 hours a day until you go to sleep. You never stop the meditation. But if you move quickly, you'll lose it. So you want to go very slow and you don't want to speak. If you open the door, you're meditating. So stop thinking of meditation as sitting. Think of meditation that you do all day long, never ever breaking. You go to the toilet, you're meditating. You read in your text, you're meditating. You eat, you're meditating. If you have to say something to somebody, you meditate. You never stop. That is the way. This is fast. Then you can have your whole day's meditation, not special sessions. That is good, but you lose it every time you break it. Okay? So I want you to be relaxed, which means don't get tight, but be good posture. And be fresh. 20 minutes, half an hour, so you don't get worn out. You feel good. You feel good. Okay? Go for a walk. So you walk slowly. You stand a bit. You sit. Don't lie down because some of you are too tired. Walk, stand, sit. Walk, stand, sit. Walk, stand, sit. Walk, stand, sit. Go get a cup of tea. Go to the toilet. Never stops. Okay? I think that's plenty for this morning. Okay? And if you get too much anxiety or too tight, then maybe you do something that you know works, a bit of yoga, something that Jamie showed you, something that brings the breath back and you feel, oh, I feel good now. Because sometimes when you go from posture, you get too tight, the breath stops and you get tight. So you want to know how to bring the breath back. I think that's fine. Let's share the merit. By this powerful activity, may it lead to the cessation of suffering for all beings. Idande punyakamang asawaki wang ho tu, idande punyakamang asawaki wang ho tu, idande punyakamang asawaki wang ho tu. Sabbe satasu grahantu, may all beings be well and happy, and may all beings be established in a continuum of freedom, the perfect union of wisdom and compassion.